for Leologos Radio, the weekly radio program featuring the best in Greek music and culture, plus interviews with Greek and international newsmakers. Leologos Radio with Michael Nevaralekis begins now. This is Leologos Radio, the global Greek radio program which bridges the worldwide Greek community and which is heard on 25 radio stations worldwide across 5 countries, 4 continents, and online. Today we're welcoming a new addition to our broadcast network, the online radio station The Global Voice. My name is Michael Nevradakis, and today on our program, the Leologos interview series will feature part 2 of our interview with Greek journalist Dimitris Yiannopoulos, former press attaché to Yiannis Varoufakis when Varoufakis was Greece's finance minister. In part 1 of this interview, Yiannopoulos shared with us many revelations about the true nature of Varoufakis' agreements with the Troika during his first weeks as finance minister, agreements which tied Greece into further austerity, contrary to the rhetoric of Varoufakis and the Syriza-led government at the time. Today, in part 2 of our interview, Yiannopoulos will analyze the current political and economic situation in Greece and the claims of the Syriza-led government that Greece is turning a corner economically. That's coming up here today on Leologos Radio, and following this, the Leologos interview series will feature an interview with Maria Karamitsos, founder and editor of WindyCityGreek.com, with a fascinating discussion about Chicago's Greek community, about her efforts with Windy City Greek, and with some highlights of the recent visit of Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras to Chicago. Coming up right now, though, is part 2 of our interview with journalist Dimitris Yiannopoulos here on Leologos Radio and the Leologos interview series. The Leologos interview series, our weekly segment featuring interviews on matters pertaining to Greece and the worldwide Greek community, coming up next here on Leologos Radio. We are on the air here on Leologos Radio and the Leologos interview series with journalist Dimitris Yiannopoulos for part 2 of our interview. At the present time, the Syriza-led government in Greece is claiming that the worst is over for Greece, that the country is emerging out of the economic crisis, that unemployment is on a decline, that economic growth has been achieved. We have seen Syriza's recent triumphant PR concerning the visit of French President Emmanuel Macron to Greece. Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras, in his recent annual speech at the Thessaloniki Trade Fair, said that talk of Grexit has been replaced by talk of Grinvest and foreign investment that is coming to Greece. With the third evaluation of the Greek economy by the Troika coming up, how do you view the economic realities in Greece today?
Well, there are two sides to this. To say that the worst is over in general statistical terms may be right. Why? Because the Greek economy has crashed and lost 25% of its GDP, some 30-40% of its productive capacity in the space of four years. And since 2013, actually, it has stopped crashing. It has stopped collapsing. It has stopped losing GDP by minus 5, minus 6, minus 4, minus 3. It has stabilized at a very low level from which in the past 4 years it hasn't managed to grow out of at all. And that's because the Greek economy, in terms of structure rather than statistics, is an amputated economy. An economy that has seen strategic sectors like the banking sector, the social security sector, the housing sector, the construction sector being decimated, literally decimated. And these are the sectors that make up most of an economy's growth potential in bad or good times. And this is the case for the USA or Germany, as well as small countries like Greece. These are the sectors that are moving an economy forward. If there's an investment here and there, of course the rate of investment is very important. But the rate of investment in Greece has been literally, very, very low. And foreign direct investment in particular, that's the only factor, the only investment at the moment that can push the economy to a modicum of recovery, is still extremely low, even though, through privatizations, there's capital coming in, or at least in accounting terms, the current account balances are improving and showing investment rising, whereas it's just money coming in to replace previous state ownership. In the long term, this is going to be detrimental to Greek interests because the profits out of these so-called investments are going to go back to the countries where they came from, mainly Germany, France, Italy, etc. So really the recovery that Tsipras is talking about is a recovery at a level, at a ground level or below ground level, really. It's just a flat, little jumps in a flat line. And really, flat line, metaphorically speaking, is where the Greek economy is stuck in at the moment. It cannot be revived. Why? Because, let's say, the principle, the major statistical fact which few people have, or rather most people have underestimated or have ignored, is the fact that Greek households are showing a negative savings rate, which means negative savings rates of between 15 and 20%, which means that they are consuming or paying out 20% more than they earn, which means that there is really no domestic capital available for investment. In fact, the major impediment to investment and growth is not the lack of investment, but the fact that every single sector of the Greek economy, the state, the banks, and private households are over indebted. They're indebted they are over indebted to the state. The state is over indebted to its suppliers. The banks are indebted to the ECB. They're stuffed with non-performing loans to the rate of 60% of their assets, which is an enormous amount considering that before the crisis, non-performing loans in Greece were among the lowest in Europe, around 7 to 8%. Now they're 60%. And people are still saying, oh, we spent so much in previous years, and we should pay for this and punish for this, etc., etc. Nothing of that is true. In fact, the Greek banking sector and household savings and consumption, as well as investment, have plummeted. And this has had an effect of long-term stagnation, which we are facing now since 2013. A stagnation for which, you know, a growth rate of 0.5 or 1% is nothing. It's a growth rate that will not even pay for the replacement of existing or remaining equipment in the Greek economy. So, quite frankly, I believe that unless there is a solution, a radical solution to the Greek debt problem, to the Greek over-indebtedness problem, which starts, of course, from the debt, foreign debt, from the foreign debt, which is mostly in the hands of the ECB, the European Union, and the IMF at the moment. Unless there is a very drastic cut or write-off of a very big portion of this debt, and this write-off would have to trickle down to the remaining sectors of the economy so that there is some breathing space for genuine recovery, nothing is going to improve. And in fact, most of the people don't see improvement. They don't see improvement. Why? Because they are under a constant persecution from the tax authorities. Yesterday, or the day before yesterday, Deputy Minister of Finance said that they're going to hunt down the 30,000, 25,000, 30,000 companies that have fled into the other Balkan countries, because they say, she said that they fled for tax evasion reasons, and their books have to be looked at then, etc. So basically, the Greek state has become a predator of the Greek people. It used to be an oppressive state anyway, largely undemocratic, let's say, and clientelist state. Now it's become a predator state, one that does not allow any kind of respite, economic respite, to Greek households. And I'm not talking about the households that are now living in poverty. I'm talking about middle-class households that don't know how to make ends meet from one day to the other, exactly because they don't know what kind of taxes they will have to pay next month. The latest news for Greek household is that the Enfia, barbaric law against private property in Greece, is going to be due next year in March rather than in July that it was this year. So, which means that once you stop paying this year's tax, you're going to have to start paying next year's tax. And there's no end to that, precisely because whatever the government does, there's always a reduction of its capacity to fulfill its so-called tax revenue obligations and targets, as is happening now. Right now, I mean, I think even though there is a surplus for which the government is bragging, the tax revenue is still under the target set by the Troika in the second evaluation.
You have said that the economic crisis, which has stricken several European countries, including Greece, of course, but also countries such as Portugal and Ireland, is a crisis that has been constructed. How do you support this view, and how would you characterize the role of Germany and the major central banking institutions in creating this artificial, as you call it, crisis?
I wouldn't use the word artificial, but I would say that once the Greek and Irish situation were taken into account by the major European economic and political centers of power, it appeared useful to transfer, or rather to shift attention from the crisis of the banking sector that had erupted in 2008 to a so-called European public debt crisis. And the reason I mention Ireland was that at the time Ireland was forced by the ECB, blackmailed by the ECB, to recapitalize, to take over and recapitalize its bankrupt banks. And that had the results of pushing the deficit of the Irish state up to 15.5% in 2009 and 31% in 2010. Now, how from that year on the deficit has disappeared is another matter. Okay, it has disappeared somewhere under the table of the ECB, the Bank of England, and the Irish Central Bank. But the point is that in order to not to draw attention to the problem of Ireland, because Ireland had already suffered a couple of years of very drastic austerity, and there was no point in making it an example, they shifted the attention to Greece. And that was the main reason why the Greek deficit, public deficit of 2009 had to be blown up to something like 30% or 40% above its real level. And that was done initially by the first finance minister of George Papandreou, George Papakonstantinou, who initially demanded from the Greek Statistical Office at the time to report to him back a deficit of 15%. And when the Statistical Service said that that's impossible, it's nowhere near 15%, he said, okay, then do it 12%. And that's when the game of pushing up, blowing up the Greek deficit started. Now, that was really the situation. Of course, behind that there was political wheeling and dealing, George Papandreou with Strauss-Kahn and the IMF and requests for help by the European Union. And the funny thing was that in late 2009, the European Union had already decided to reinstate a regime of supervision that he had done before with Greece. But what happened in early 2010 was that the European Central Bank, again, Mr. Trichet, Jean-Claude Trichet was the president of the European Central Bank at the time, made a statement saying that Greece should not be confident that the European Central Bank will accept Greek bonds forever as collateral, because evaluation by the agencies are not going well. Now, from that statement onward, of course, that's when the real debt crisis in Greece started. Why? Because, of course, there was a negative speculation. The CDS started rising. The Greek bonds cost skyrocketed, and of course the country came near bankruptcy. So what I'm saying is that there were specific economic decisions that created the Greek crisis. It needn't have happened if it weren't deemed useful by the powers that be in Europe. I'm not saying it's artificial, because from the moment the markets turned against Greece, Greek debt servicing capacity would collapse, right? So the crisis was real, but it was largely prodded and manufactured by people who were interested in shifting the blame or the attention of public opinion against Greece rather than Ireland and the banking sector in Europe that remains over indebted, of course, but nobody talks about it. In the past 8 years, for the past 8 years, the major Greek banks, Deutsche Bank, Commerzbank, Credit Suisse, etc. No, not Credit Suisse, sorry. Credit Lyonnais and Agricole, etc. The major Greek banking concerns are steeped in debt and liabilities, which they're over leveraged by 30 or 40 times their capital. So, but because the ECB can fund them, finance them indefinitely, and by keeping their records or their accounts nominally in balance, nobody is talking about the real problem, which is over indebtedness in the European banking system that is creating all this backlog of debt, especially in the weaker countries: Greece, Portugal, Spain, Italy, and even France at the time. Now, of course, the rest of Europe may be going through some kind of a recovery, a very tenuous and low-level recovery, but that doesn't mean that the problems have gone away and they're constantly reappearing in different forms, as we see in Catalonia, Eastern Europe, as we see with the problem of migration. So really the situation is not very positive, and there are forces that have manufactured the crisis and transformed it from what it originally was, an international banking crisis, into a political and social and even environmental crisis.
We are speaking with journalist Dimitris Yiannopoulos here on the Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos interview series. There is a major wave of Euroscepticism throughout much of the European continent, as exemplified by the referendum result in favor of Brexit in the United Kingdom. We have not seen a similar trend in Greece, though, despite the economic crisis. Why do you believe this is the case?
Personally, I believe that Euroscepticism in Greece is over the roof, is going through the roof at the moment. But it is passive. It's not expressing itself as a political imperative. And the reason being that the Greek people have suffered a lot by hoping that they could overcome their predicament by changing their relationship, their unequal and oppressive relationship with the Eurozone and the Euro, one way or the other. The disappointment of this hope is what creates a passive Euroscepticism. That passive Euroscepticism, the last time that the passive Euroscepticism was expressed was at the referendum of the 5th of July, 2015. That referendum was, to the tune of 62-63% against the Troika, was in effect a referendum against the European Union institutions, the way they had treated Greece. It was a vote and a referendum of defiance. But, of course, that's where the great responsibility of Syriza lay at that time. It was completely unprepared to handle a clash or a rupture, as they called it, with the European Union institutions. And I'm not saying that they would have to push for an exit from the euro, but they would have to push for the return of national sovereignty of one kind or the other, some kind of equality that all the other countries of the European Union enjoy. But the Tsipras government was not prepared for that. So it succumbed to the blackmail, it succumbed to the pressures, it succumbed to the strangulation of the Greek economy, which the European Union had pushed in the previous preceding 5 months. And that's really the tragedy, because from then on, the Greek people lost all hope. They couldn't see any workable alternative. All they saw was a few slogans here and there, but no real pathway, no tactics and no strategy of getting out of the crisis. And they didn't see the sort of demands that could mobilize popular resistance to the situation now. So basically, what they're doing is fleeing the country. 70% of the people say that if they had the chance or the means, they would migrate to anywhere else but Greece, in Europe, America, and only the young can do that, of course. And a portion of the young, not all of them. And this is the situation at the moment. a very difficult situation, but not one that is devoid of Euroscepticism. Quite the contrary. I think the Euroscepticism that's prevalent in Greece at the moment is much stronger and deeper than anywhere else in Europe, including Britain, including Eastern Europe, where it's rising also.
Do you believe that the current Syriza-led government in Greece will complete its four-year term and hold elections in September 2019? Or do you believe that we will see electoral developments in Greece sooner, perhaps sometime next year?
Well, that will largely depend on whether the European Union is ready to risk setting Syriza aside or even pushing it to the parliamentary opposition. That is a very risky decision to make because no other government would have applied and implemented the sort of measures which Syriza has implemented. Syriza has virtually wiped out the Greek social security system. It is passing one taxation law after the other with no parliamentary opposition. It is making all sorts of politically correct decisions and matters of immigration, naturalization of immigrants, of illegal immigrants, legalization of, or rather the legal choice of sexual identity, things that no other government would have passed. And in a situation where Greek Parliament is totally subordinate to the Troika, and this is a situation that defines Greece as a protectorate, even in de jure terms, you know, not just de facto, because the third Memorandum of Understanding specifically demands that every legal bill has to pass through the Troika, has to get approval from the Troika before it reaches Parliament. And this means that Greece has completely lost its national sovereignty.
Well, Mr. Yiannopoulos, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us here on Diálogos Radio and the Diálogos interview series, and for sharing your thoughts, your insights, and your experiences with us and our listeners.
Thank you very much for having me too. Yeah.
We just wrapped up our interview with journalist Dimitris Yiannopoulos, former press advisor to Greece's ex-finance minister Yanis Varoufakis, and the podcast of the full interview with Mr. Yiannopoulos, parts 1 and 2, will soon be available on our website, dialogosmedia.org, in the Diálogos Radio apps for Android and Kindle, in Apple Podcasts, TuneIn.com, and other podcast directories as well. Coming up now on Diálogos Radio in the Diálogos interview series is our second interview for today with journalist Maria Karamitsos of Windy City Greek. The Diálogos interview series, our weekly segment featuring interviews on matters pertaining to Greece and the worldwide Greek community, coming up next here on Diálogos Radio. Joining us today on Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos interview series is Maria Karamitsos, founder and editor of the website Windy City Greek. Maria will be joining us from Chicago and will share with us some words about Windy City's Greek community, the idea and concept behind Windy City Greek, as well as an update regarding the recent visit of Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras to Chicago. Maria, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start out by talking about Chicago's Greek community. Share with us, if you will, a brief history of the well-known Greek town of Chicago and of Chicago's Greek community in general.
Sure. Many people, let's say some people don't know that Greektown was originally in a different neighborhood, actually just a bit south of where it stands currently. The original Greek town in Chicago was called the Delta because the streets that intersect form the neighborhood created the shape of the triangle. And this was a community that was made up of not only Greek immigrants, but also Italian immigrants and Jews. And it was a neighborhood where people not only they lived, they worked, they worshipped. There was a church in the neighborhood, Trinity. And this was a very vibrant community, and most Greeks, when they came to Chicago, they passed through the Delta. They may have stayed there. They may have found work there. They certainly had friends there and shopped there. The Delta was demolished in the early 1960s to build the University of Illinois at Chicago campus, and this was a little bit controversial. Some of the residents kind of felt that their homes had been taken away unfairly, and as a result, the mayor of Chicago named the strip of Halsted Street just to the north of the Delta as Greektown in the early 1970s, and itself became. Became a tourist attraction, a location for Greek restaurants and shops, and for many years nightlife, and that's our Greek town today.
How did your own family come to end up in Chicago? From what I understand, there's an interesting story behind this.
My papu, my mother's father, came to the United States in 1906. He was from the Yes in Arcadia, and he came to the United States to work with his father and uncle, who were in Wyoming, laying railroad tracks. And he came to work with them. And I don't know if at the time any of them had really planned to stay in the United States. As the story goes, the uncle was kicked in the head by a donkey and died. And my papu's father returned to Greece to bring the news to the family. Subsequently, my papu decided that maybe this wasn't a good line of work, and he needed to find something else. He did have an uncle in Chicago who was in the grocery business, and so he came to Chicago and worked with his uncle and learned the business. His uncle did not marry and didn't have children, and so he thought, you know, he'd eventually take over the business from his uncle. But as his uncle grew older and his health declined, he had an opportunity to sell the business and sold it without telling Papu. And so he opened his own grocery store right across the street. And that was his start here. His grocery store originally was called J. Lo Lagos & Company. He eventually opened a restaurant next door, the Acropolis Tavern and Restaurant. And he became a very well-known, very prominent, and well-respected businessman in Chicago. My father came to the United States in 1960 from a small chorio near Pyrgos Ilias. And my mother, obviously, was born here in Chicago.
Have you found that the Greek community in recent years in Chicago has been growing, perhaps as a result of migration out of Greece due to the economic crisis?
Actually, we haven't seen much migration here. I have heard New York has seen some, but we really haven't seen much here. We haven't really had any real migration here since the 80s. That was really the last wave here in Chicago.
We are on the air with Maria Karamitsos, founder and editor of WindyCityGreek.com, here on Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos interview series. And turning now to Windy City Greek, how did you decide to get involved in Greek media, specifically through the establishment and launch of Windy City Greek? What was your vision behind this website?
I got involved in the Greek media about 15 years ago, really sort of by accident. I grew up in a home that was more American than Greek. My father's family remained in Greece. My mother's family, of her six siblings, only one other married Greek. The rest married non-Greeks, and so my cousins were all half Greek and most not Orthodox. And my yaya wanted everyone to fit in, so we didn't speak a lot of Greek. And at home we didn't speak Greek because my dad wanted to learn English because he was obviously making this his home and wanted to be able to make a living here. So it wasn't until I was in college and one day I woke up and realized, you know, I'm Greek and I'm Orthodox and I really don't know what that means. And so I set out on this quest to re-embrace my heritage and my roots and learn everything that I could. And so after I finished graduate school, I actually returned to Greek school and relearned the language, and then really jumped in with both feet. I became very active in the community. I performed with the Greek dance troupe for 8 years, belonged to many organizations, and I began writing in 2002. A friend of mine, Alexa Gass, she had launched a magazine called Greek Circle, and that was published quarterly out of Chicago. And so I began writing some feature articles for her. But at the time, I did it really just for fun. I always enjoyed writing, and I had established a career in marketing and really never took it all very seriously. It was just for fun. As the economy took a dip in the early 2000s, I struggled in my career as marketing was always the first thing to go. Many companies really didn't understand the value of marketing, and I think that's changed today, fortunately. But back then, that would always be the first thing that was eliminated. And so I found myself about once a year without a job as a company closed, as a department closed. And so I started to think about, well, what's my next progression? What's going to be my new career? Because, you know, there's no stability here. And fast forward to 2005, and I had gotten to know the staff at the Greek Star newspaper from all the organizations that I worked with. And the sports editor, Terry Poulos at the time, he suggested that I write a column about things to do in Greek Chicago. And so he arranged a meeting with the chairman, who was Frank Camberos at the time. And we pitched the idea to him, and he loved it. And so I started that summer writing a column twice a month called Stokokendro. And it was all about things to do in Greek Chicago. And at the time, I thought, okay, this is just for fun. We'll see where this goes. And so, you know, I was just still trying to figure out the next progression in my career path. At that time, I was working with Alexa Gauss from the Greek Circle. She was writing a book called Greek Town Chicago, Its History, Its Recipes. And I contributed to this book, and I am the food editor, incidentally. And the publisher had signed me up to orchestrate the market launch in Chicago. So we hosted a party at the former location of the National Hellenic Museum, which was above the Greek Islands restaurant in Greek Town. And we had this party, And Mr. Camberos approached me and said that our editor was about to have her second child and needed some help. And how would I feel about becoming the associate editor? And I could write about anything I wanted as long as it was Greek related. And they put me on the payroll. And I thought, wow, that sounds great. Okay, let's do it. And he said, well, there's only one catch. It's part-time. And that actually worked out perfect for me because I was in the middle of planning my wedding and my husband and I wanted to start our family right away. So I wasn't looking for something full-time. And I went to work for the Greek Star as the associate editor and senior writer. And it was the most amazing 10 years. I learned so many things. I met so many people. And I really felt like I found my place. Like that was where I was meant to be. Now, in early 2015, the Greek Star shut down, as did the Greek Circle magazine. It was a very difficult time for print publications as the internet really took hold and there were many options to receive news for free. So those two publications were among the casualties of the internet boom. And so at that point, I really wasn't sure what was next for me. I thought I would take some time and finish a novel that I started writing. Many people had urged me to start a publication, but I really wasn't sure that I wanted to take that on. And I didn't want to create a newspaper because I didn't want to share not so good news, as it were. And to this point, I had contributed to several other magazines and two other books. So I thought, you know, I'll work on my novel and see where things go. Now, my family and I began to prepare for a trip to Greece in the summer of 2015. And I began to see more and more negative news articles about Greece and about Greek people in general. And I kept hearing the phrase, Greeks built the Parthenon and called it a day. And it really angered me because I knew that's not what Greek people are about, that Greek people are highly educated, they're very motivated, they're innovative business people and creative minds, and they've been doing amazing things for years, and most people were not hearing about it. And through the years that I had been writing, I had always tried to bring these types of stories out. And I get really fired up, and I realized it was time for a new kind of publication, sort of, you know, turning the typical media model on its edge, if you will, and created this digital magazine that would focus on sharing all of these very positive stories of all the innovative and exciting things that Greek people around are doing. That's the spirit that we created Windy City Greek. We launched in September 2015, and it's been an absolute whirlwind. It took off very, very quickly, I'm very pleased to say. And I think that people really needed something positive, and the feedback that we get is so encouraging, and people sharing with us how stories make them very proud of their Hellenic heritage.
One of the regular ongoing columns of Windy City Greek is the Greek Americans in Greece feature. And this, of course, seems to be contrary to the prevailing trend where many Greeks are leaving the country and where it's considered almost crazy for a diaspora Greek to move back or to remain in the homeland. What inspired you to launch this particular feature?
Well, I had known several Greek Americans that were living in Greece, and they were very positive about their experiences there, and they really had no intention of leaving. Now, in 2015, when I was in Greece, I caught up with a dear friend of mine that lived in Chicago for 20 years, and returned to his native Kalamata in 2000. And this is a very, very dynamic spirit who has a very entrepreneurial mind, very energetic, and he had launched his own real estate firm and property management, and he was doing some very interesting things. And we got to talking, and I asked him, can we share your story? It's so positive and very inspiring. And so we did. And then through him, I met another Greek American, a Chicago born Greek that's living in Kalamata. He's a restaurateur. And I asked him, can I share your story? And he was so excited to share his story and talk about what it was like to be an entrepreneur in Greece and tell us, you know, that, you know, even though there are challenges, it was very important to stay there and to you know, tell people that you know, there's opportunity in Greece and it's important to stay there and why. And these articles got such a tremendous response. We decided that we wanted to find more Greek Americans in Greece and share their stories. And so these, you know, Q&A features we try to do about one a month, they've become so popular. And now people are contacting us to say, yeah, hi, I'm a Greek American in Greece. I'd like to share my story. And now this is our longest running and most popular series on the site.
Recently, Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras visited Chicago and met with representatives of the local Greek community. What did Tsipras' visit to Chicago include, and what were the reactions to his visit?
Well, first, I'd like to say this was a very historic opportunity for Chicago Greeks. This was the first time that a Greek prime minister had visited Chicago in an official capacity. About 20 years ago, Kostis Stefanopoulos, who was the president of Greece at the time, he had visited. We've hosted Doro Bakoyanni here. Dimitri Avramopoulos has been here. Many different ministers, most recently Elena Kuntoura, who's the minister of tourism, has visited here, but never a prime minister. And it's really strange if you think about it, with the size of the Greek community here and the history of Greeks in Chicago. I mean, at one point, Chicago was the largest Greek community in the United States. And so it was a little strange that we'd never been visited by a prime minister. So this was a very historic visit that was heralded by Chicago Greeks, sort of a validation, if you will, that we're here and we're a sizable and an important community in the diaspora. Typically, when a prime minister would come, you know, they would visit New York and Washington, D.C. So it was really, really wonderful to have the acknowledgement of him coming here. Mr. Tsipras met with many businessmen and leaders in Chicago, Greek businessmen like John Kalamos Sr. and John Koudounis from Kalamos Investments. He toured CineSpace Film Studios with Alex Pisios, the president and CEO. He had meetings with many Greek businessmen, other civic leaders. There was a reception for him at the National Hellenic Museum. He also addressed the Chicago Council on Foreign Relations, Chicago Council on Global Relations, and he toured 1871, which is the city's center for technology and innovation. 1871 is sort of a 21st century incubator, if you will, helping startups really get on their feet and finding funding and learning how to manage their businesses. And incidentally, they hosted a Greek startup a couple of months ago. called Ismos. And so that was part of Mr. Tsipras' agenda to learn about these things and foster investment in Greece and in Greek businesses. He also met with Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, the governor of the state of Illinois, Bruce Rauner, really trying to establish some partnerships and some support for Greece. At the National Hellenic Museum, he spoke repeatedly about Greece's recovery. He proclaimed that Greece is back, and saying that Greece is recovering. It's back, not back to the policies that got it into the crisis in the first place, but looking toward a bright future. He also talked about trying to bring about a brain gain in response to all the brain drain that was happening over the years. And you know, he reiterated his commitment to strengthening ties between not just Greek Americans, but with the U.S. in general.
In closing, how do you personally view the future of Greek America, of Hellenism in Chicago and the United States more broadly, particularly in terms of the survival of Greek cultural identification, identification with Greece, usage of the Greek language by the next generations, and so forth?
I think Chicago in particular, I can speak to because I'm born and raised here, and I can say that our community is very strong and very vibrant. We have Greek school programs that are thriving in parochial schools here, and many different ways for Greeks of all ages to celebrate their culture. I have heard scholars talk about, you know, in subsequent generations, they think that the Greek language will no longer be spoken. I personally don't see that happening. Maybe, you know, several generations down the way, but I see, you know, in Chicago, Greeks are very, very proud of their heritage, of their history, culture, and actively celebrate it.
Well, Maria, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us today here on Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos interview series. Best of luck with your continued efforts with Windy City Greek. And of course, listeners can find Windy City Greek at windycitygreek.com. Maria, thanks again.
Thank you so much.
You are listening to Dialogos Radio, where we just wrapped up our interview with Maria Karamitsos, founder and editor of Windy City Greek. The podcast of this interview will be available shortly on dialogosmedia.org, in the Dialogos Radio apps for Android and Kindle, and in Apple Podcasts, TuneIn.com, and other podcast directories. That wraps up this week's edition of Dialogos Radio. Be sure to visit dialogosmedia.org for our podcasts, on-demand programming, articles and analyses, our online radio station, Dialogos Radio 24/7, and for updates on what's coming up on future broadcasts. For Dialogos Radio, this is Michael Navradakis. Thanks for joining us.